Our story begins by telling us that Jesus and his new disciples went to Capernaum. On the Sabbath, they went, a day off, a day when there was not supposed to be any work, period, stop. No work on the Sabbath. He went into the synagogue and taught something he wasn't supposed to do, A, and he wasn't supposed to do it then, B. And he didn't have, even though he's Jesus, in the eyes of the authorities, he didn't have an advanced theological degree. He wasn't ordained, but he taught as if he was somebody that was highfalutin with authority. He taught with authority in front of the authorities at a time and a place when he wasn't supposed to be teaching. That takes guts. And in the midst of the lesson, this man with the unclean spirit, a man possessed, enters in, interrupting the lesson. "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth?" he calls out. "Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are." And then we hear the crowd after Jesus calls the spirit out of the man. Who does he think he is? Who is he? Teaching with authority. I think it's interesting that the unclean spirit, the demonic force, recognizes who Jesus is before anybody else. There's something to that. Jesus is the exorcist. There is such cultural distance between us today in a world of iPhones and iPads and all this technology that makes it really hard for us to hear about demons and unclean spirits and stuff like that. Shouting with convulsions and shaking and all of that, that's not the way that we understand mental illness or physical illness or anything today. But I think there's something powerful to what we hear in our story. So I want to help us narrow that gap. Let me share with you a story. When I was in seminary, back at Luther in the Twin Cities, one of my colleagues, Jake, he was the same age as me. He brand new to the seminary. He had just gotten married, too. Jake was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So waking up in the middle of the night with sweats, felt this kind of heaviness in his chest, and he had a big mass in his chest. Two guys, similar place in life, same school, same age, both just married. Could have been me. Could have been me. Why was it him? And he decided to focus a great deal of his healing journey into writing about what this experience was like and what it told him about God, what it told him about his own spirituality. And not everybody could do that. This was part of his healing. But Jake created this blog called Cancer in Theology, and it's still out there. You can still read it. And for this blog, he had solicited a number of scholars and pastors and theologians from all over the place. Theologians basically just talk about God. Theology is a fancy word for God talk. What does something tell you about God and how God operates in the world or how you understand God? What it says about God. One of those pastors that wrote and blogged about cancer and theology, one of them that blogged about that for him, is a guy named Andy Root, who was a professor at Luther Seminary. And Andy wrote an article that I will never forget. He talked about cancer as this unclean spirit, an unclean spirit. Not because the person did something wrong to get it or the person was unclean or something. No. He talked about it in the way that you hear about in the Bible. Unclean spirits in the Bible serve one purpose. They divide and separate. They rob. They steal. They take things away. They take people away from their families. They take people away from their communities. They take away your time. They take away your health. They take away your finances. They take away the stuff that makes you whole. They rob you of abundant life. In a sense, they divide and they separate people. Divide and separate individuals from one another. And this is how Andy Root, this professor, talked about cancer. He said, in a way, it's a demonic thing because it does what demons do in the Bible, what unclean spirits do in the Bible. And that is its power, to divide and separate people from one another, to rob them of abundant life. I will never forget reading that article because it makes me think about these exorcisms and demonic stuff in the Bible. Because when you think about this man who was possessed by that unclean spirit and what Jesus did for him, it's not so foreign. It helps us show what kind of God that we have. We have a God that does not want us to be apart from one another, a God that does not want us to have things divide and separate us from our families, from our spouses, our loved ones, our friends, our churches. We have a kind of God that does not want to have things divide us and separate us, possessing us, taking over our world. A kind of God who shows up like this unclean spirit and like Jesus in the most inconvenient places and times in front of the authorities to say we have to fix this right now. So individuals and families, communities and friends are not divided and separated by problems but are made whole again. We don't know how to process what an unclean spirit is. It's a weird thing in modern times. But we can imagine the impacts that it had on this man who comes stumbling into the church, basically. We can imagine that it impacted his life and the life of his family. He probably was a danger to himself and others. He likely was socially ostracized at this point, shouting out in such a strange way. You can imagine those who loved him anguished about what happened to him and how they couldn't do anything about it. And the first thing that Jesus does, and first things matter, is he does something about it. He does something about this thing that is separating and dividing this man from his family, his friends, his church, his community. That is his first public act of ministry, to free this man, to restore him to himself, to his loved ones, and to his community. This is the first thing Jesus does, so it tells us how important it is. It is to restore this man to abundant life, to make him whole, dividing and separating him, but with the power of life, not death. In our world today, the 21st century, we may not see these demonic things in the sense that people understood them back in the day when Jesus walked and talked on the earth, physically there. But I am certain there are unclean spirits. Yeah? There are things that have been visible and have measurable effects on our lives and on our communities. Maybe even this church. What are the things that rob individuals of abundant life? Might it be racism or sexism or being afraid of folks from other traditions, religious or otherwise? Might it be harassment or unsafe working conditions or something like that? Lack of education, loss of employment. All these things that our culture has created, some of them are unclean spirits. The list can go on, and I'm sure you have things coming to mind. The point isn't to name and claim those things, but I think it's to think about what Jesus does because of those things. He steps in and restores someone of what robs them, restores them from what robs them of abundant life. Jesus, the exorcist, is not some priest that is dressed in all black with a collar and holy water and shouting out, "The power of me compels you," or something like that. He taught with authority, even though we hear from the source of the authority, these priests and scribes, that he didn't have authority. He did what he did because he was compelled to make this man whole. And the demonic force, the unclean spirit, met its match. It recognized the power of God in the one who sought to stand up to evil. It recognized the authority of one that said no to the power of death. So how can we, as a church, as individuals, as families, as a community gather, how can we get about the business of diminishing the things that rob people of abundant life? Good to ponder. How can we restore or correct the things that rob people of what makes them whole? I think it's important for all of us to think about that. My prayer for all of us is that we aren't like cell phones, like my phone, unable to recognize the word exorcism, let alone the concept. Because there are forces alive and well that rob us and our families and our communities, even our church, of abundant life. And because we hear in our story the very first act of Jesus' ministry is prioritizing standing up to those things, I think it should impel us to do that as well. We can know with confidence that we have God on our side when we stand up or face something that robs others of their wholeness. Because there is another. There is another. This is how Andy Root concludes his piece talking about theology and cancer. He says, cancer is scary. He says, it is powerful. He says, its power is the power of death and to take away and to divide and separate. But there is another who divides and separates, but not to destroy with the power of death, but to make whole, to restore. And his name is not death, and his name is not legion, but Jesus. He is the one who sets people aside as holy and blessed. He is the one, through baptism, who names and claims those who would be on the margins, those who would otherwise not be whole, as God's own beloved. The one who conquers death through resurrection. The one who conquers death that it might not have the power to separate us from one another. Ever. He is Jesus. Let's be more like Jesus and less like Legion. Amen? Amen.